very warm welcome to everyone. Can I just check, do you hear me okay? Is the sound all right for you? That's great. So really feel invited just to take a few moments, just settling in, arriving, feeling into how you're feeling in this moment, how life's unfolding. And yeah, if you like, you're really welcome to say hello in the chat. You can mention how you are, where you are, anything that you wish to pop in there. It'd be nice to hear from each other as we kind of gather into the online Dharma Hall. One of these is it's very nice, you know, to get a sense of each other, get a sense of the, sometimes actually, how wide this Sangha is, you know, that you might be surprised to find, you know, maybe there's someone in neighboring town, maybe there's someone on the other side of the world. Yeah, so it's just nice. If you want to mention where you are, if you want to mention how you are, it's all very welcome. So yeah, we're getting a little bit of a sense that we're certainly spread around a little bit wider than you might normally expect at a local sitting group or city Dharma session. So it's really nice to have you here. And it's really nice just to kind of see a few words giving that sense of your reality, sense of your experience, sense of what you're perceiving. And yeah, just to say a few things in regards to this, you know, very wide welcome. You're really welcome to be here how you wish to be. So you don't need to feel that you have to appear in a certain way, and that can also mean literally appear. You don't have to have your video on. You don't also have to be muted. Yeah. So you know, if there are some ahas or ooh, yeah, live sounds in response, that's also completely fine. You know, I'm very happy to receive those, to perceive those from my side as well. Yeah. So don't feel this is supposed to be a one-directional thing. So you have your video on, video off, muted, unmuted, you know, mics live or not, however you like. Something that's probably quite worth exploring is whether it's nice to have your self view on or off. Yeah, sometimes we're quite happy just to have a little mirror image of ourselves down there. We can just check, yep, still look like me. You know, still look what I would consider, you know, acceptable enough, or however we would rate and gauge that. We won't go too far into the thought processes of the inner critic, but, you know, they do happen, don't they? And maybe there's even inner praise. Well, looking pretty good today. But it can also be a bit of a distraction. And so if you want, you know, we have that option. We can turn it off. I think it's we've got those three dots, haven't we? And then you can hide self-view. The easy Dharma anatta lens. So, oh, I just disappear, which is a little bit closer actually to our normal reality. Yeah, the headless view. It's like you don't actually see yourself most of the time. What a relief that is. So if you want that relief during the Zoom call, that's there as well. So also with that kind of mention earlier of like not being muted, certainly for the whole session, because I'd really like us to, in the last period of our time together, kind of open out a little bit more of a sharing, reflections, you know, how do the practices we're talking about here, how does the theoretical stuff land with you? Really interested to see, you know, what are your responses to these ideas, these ways of practicing, or all the rest that we kind of co-create, discover together. Really would like to hear your reflections, your experiences. And it can also be time for anything else. So I'll leave a bit of time at the end for that. Let's say, you know, fingers crossed, I'm aiming to do that. So shortly, we'll have a meditation that will flow into a Dharma reflection. I think things I've been thinking about, felt could be helpful to explore together. And then, as I say, yeah, something a bit more dynamic in the latter part, if you're interested in engaging in that. So if it's okay, I'd like to just start off this session mirroring something that I think is really helpful in terms of starting off all of our meditation sessions. As we approach the meditation cushion or chair or walking path or whatever else, I think it's really important to ask ourselves, what is it I'd actually like to offer to this time? What would I like to offer into this period of practice? Another way we could speak about it is like, what would I like to make from this time? So we have this kind of period of time. What would I like to make? What would I like to cultivate? What would I like to see more of? Kind of talking about our intentions. Yeah, intentions create experiences. Sometimes it can be quite overlooked. The importance, the potency of what seeds I'm actually planting in this moment. I have this idea, I just do my practice. You can also have a different idea, it's like, this is an opportunity to plant some seeds. Yeah. And it's like we've gone to the nursery that has all the seeds and think, what are the seeds? What are the intentions you want to see more of? One way we can frame that question is, what do you see or sense or imagine or dream or wish that this world is calling for? Your being is calling for, your group of friends, your connections. What are beings calling for at this time? And is it possible that our practice has the potential to serve that? What would you like to see more of? What would you like to offer? What would you like to make from this time? And so there's no right or wrong answer, and there's no... it doesn't have to fit into language, but maybe a word or a couple of words come. And if they do, really nice thing that we can do as a community is actually share those. It can be a real kind of depth of experience. If you like, before we take this into a meditation, we could just have a little kind of waterfall of intentions flow through the chat, if you wish. And so it could be very specific, you know. Could be something I wish for someone very specific, and if you feel to, you're very welcome to write that. It could be something more general or universal, and if you like, either translating from something personal to that, and likewise, you know, really welcome, put those into the chat. And a few of those already flowing through. So, stability and stillness. And something I find interesting about reading this and knowing this is someone's intention is it's actually very, can feel very alive. I actually read about stillness and stability, and as I hear it, I actually, it's got that kind of fragrance, that flavour of it. You know, in the same way as if someone's put a piece of music together, they've written a book, you know, a novel or something, it's about something, but it actually gives you that feeling, like a memory gives you that feeling of something. So we can read these intentions in that way, if you wish. Compassion and appreciation. Two beautiful, illimitable heart qualities. Yeah. The caring and connection. More gratitude. Openness and peace. More open to possibilities. And if you also feel it this way, but it feels like any of these could be almost like a mantra of a meditation. You know, it's like, just remind ourselves with that. And that's very much what I'd like to invite as to do. So yeah, you can carry on, you can read the rest of the intentions, or we can come back to them. Yeah, don't have to overload with too many intentions at one time. So just seeing, do you want to resonate with your intention or another's intention or cluster, whatever feels right for you. Let's bring that into the meditation together. Yeah, and I'll offer a few bits of guidance. We have a half hour practice period now. So just feel what kind of body posture is going to help support that intention. Yeah, is it sitting, lying, standing, somewhere we don't normally do, kneeling or all that kind of thing. It's just seeing. Sometimes the body wants to represent in a particular way. And that can be good for us if we guide that, allow that to present. Generally, just feeling if we can support a grounding, yeah, letting the weight of the body rest, letting the expression on the face relax. With that out breath, just grounding, resting, arriving, settling. And with the in breath, enlivening, energizing, becoming more present. If you wish, you can meet the breath sensations, the body sensations of presence, flavored with that intention. So really, mostly with the mindfulness present with our experience, but fragranced at least a little bit with that intention that you wish to see more of. If your intention doesn't perfectly translate, just using a sense of friendliness or welcoming or patience. Something that's present. So if the body's not right, maybe trying listening to the sounds. Just picking one thing to be mindful of and just letting that fragrance support us. At any time, our experience can be guided by our intentions, and it can also be led by more habitual patterns, and that's part of what it means for us to be human. It's not a mistake. And guide ourselves back a little bit more of that fragrance of our intentionality. As we meet bodily life, it's just happening, it's just unfolding, isn't it? The breath just coming and going, the sensations just appearing. So there can be this urge to identify with the body and take ownership. It's my body. Can there be a lens that just sees this is just happening? And because it's just happening, it can be met with that intention, openness, of gratitude. Kindness, spaciousness, bodily life, nature unfolding, this nearest experience of nature, this body, this, if we're in the listening realm, this listening capacity, just happening. We notice that where the attention is right now isn't really serving us in terms of gathering, in terms of clarifying and calming. Is it possible to let that go, let that flow on? Tuning in again to body and breath, like meeting an old friend, or tuning into the sounds that are flowing by. Tuning into the ephemerality of appearances. Maybe you've noticed that there's certainly sometimes an inclination to be drawn into something even when it's unpleasant for us. Agitated thinking compared to just calmly being present. Or attention drawn to an unpleasant sound or an unpleasant sensation. Again, that's how life goes. You know, it's not a problem. It's helpful to notice that we don't even make that classification. Oh, that's not nice, that's nice. It's just going on, it's just unfolding. It's called Vedana, making, categorizing experience. We open around that, not get too identified. And to show that in a way is to kind of open and bring this intention, regardless of the Vedana, regardless of its pleasance, regardless of how nice or not nice it is. Can it also be met with that kindness, that spaciousness, that care? To go beyond preference. Beautiful. If you wish to. you may notice that bringing in more intentionality starts to change experience. Intentions are not insignificant. Bring in more care, it's not the same moment. Going beyond preferences. I like this, I want it, get it. I don't like this, how can we get rid of it? How can we escape? Softening that to more equanimity, more friendliness, welcoming, changes our experience. Changes how appearances appear in perception, how they're perceived. This perceiving, it just seems to happen. Not really something we do. Appearances in consciousness just seems to happen. You can identify with being a perceiver, being the knower. Maybe it's also just possible to imbue perceiving, knowing, as if they are also things we know, also worthy of meeting with your intention of spaciousness, kindness, care. This perception, but also just that we can perceive, we can know. Whatever is known, however it's known, even knowing itself. The last few minutes, just feeling what's supportive for you. Is it helpful just opening out into whatever is perceived and meeting that with that intention that you wish to see more of? Or is it more helpful to come down to the body, into the breath, working in that field with or without that intention, just calming, soothing? Or with the field of sound. Or playing somewhere in between. One scent store, a few scent stores, all of the scent stores of experience. In the last few seconds of the meditation, just taking a moment to notice what you've cultivated from your intentional practice, how you feel, what you've supported to be here. Thank you for your practice together. It's a real pleasure to practice with you. And yes, feeling invited to adjust slowly. Sometimes in the meditation, just as we sometimes leap into it before setting intentions, we can sometimes leap out of it before really tuning in and feeling. It's like, oh, what was I doing? What impact did that have? And I'm a big fan of thinking in meditation, thinking in many things as having kind of three parts: that significance of the beginning, significance of the ending. And of course, nothing really has a beginning. It's very different. Every beginning has a beginning, a beginning part. Every beginning that seems like a thing has a beginning, a middle, and an end of that beginning, and then, then it becomes rather tricky to actually find where's really the beginning of a beginning, where's the ending of an ending, it's transitioning. But if we imagine that there is such a thing, it's really important to make sure that we care for those aspects, care for the beginnings, care for the middles, care for the endings. Very, very significant And yeah, pity if we kind of overlook them, I feel. So speaking a little bit in a moment just about kind of what were we playing around with there, how does that fit in within the framework of teachings that are kind of passed down to us through the Buddhist style tradition, you know, that kind of thing. But first of all, just want to mention that this is also passed down in that lovely tradition that we have. So many of you know this word dana means freely offered. It also means freely received. It means actually, in my eyes, it means open palm existence. Yeah, your open palm to come here to receive, deeply appreciated. The open palm of Gaia House, of all the teachers that, you know, kind of have passed along these teachings and are passing them along, you know, moment to moment. So all of that freely offered, freely received. And if you're in a place where you feel able to offer some support to myself, to Gaia House, maybe it even goes somewhere else, yeah, that would be a beautiful thing as well. So if that's possible for you, just to know that that's really welcome. And the size of that contribution isn't what is significant. Yeah, just as a small tree is generating as much oxygen as it can for us to breathe as we walk past it, you know, it's not like, oh, I only breathe from big trees. You know, it'd be absurd. But you know, we sometimes look at our own engagement and say, well, that's not really generous, you know. And oftentimes the small is, you know, certainly no less worthy, but also sometimes, you know, really, really, really very, very beautiful. So there's no expectation. That's what it means to be dana, yeah, freely offered, freely received. And you can go back to where you came from to click a few links and be able to give dana through to Gaia House. And the link below is a way that you can support me. Dependentorigination.org is a website that I use, run, set up. I've written some articles and things on there, and yeah, you're welcome to use that as a way of supporting dana, but also I hope that can also be a dana to you, also a gift to you. So as a reminder, if you want to be unmuted, you're really very welcome. If you don't want to be, that's fine. Then, you know, I can speak into silence, or I can speak into a more noisy environment. Both are good. You know, spoke a little bit earlier about this Vedana preference thing. It can kind of layer itself on. You say, oh, I like it like this, I like it not like this. And yeah, just feel invited to have it how you like it, but also invited to have it how you don't like it. You know, that's also part of our practice. Yeah, don't believe the Vedana, don't believe the preference, right? It's trying to shape us into a continuity that may or may not serve us. Yeah, and that's kind of what I want to speak a little bit about. I want to speak about the experience of me experiencing me. Yeah, how we experience ourselves. Many ways that we can subdivide our experience, and there's a few reasons why you might want to do that. Many of you might have heard about this teaching called the aggregates. Yeah, is that something people are familiar with? Kanda or Skanda in the Sanskrit. Panchupadana Skanda is the five clinging aggregates, we might call them. Yeah, clinging is a really interesting word. When we just spoke about dana, it's kind of irresistible to speak about it without reference to upadana. So we could say that while dana is the open hand, yeah, dana is an open hand way of giving and receiving. Upadana is the closed fist. Yeah, you can't carry much with a closed fist. Yeah, the closed fist isn't very useful for creating harmony, creating beauty, creating delight in our life. So that word often referred to as clinging, you know, strong grasping, identified grasping. And what do we identify with? You know, so the Buddha reflects and says, oh, there's these five aggregates that I notice we tend to get a bit obsessional about, a bit identified with, yeah, a little bit ownershipy about, yeah. So we either think they belong to us, or we think that we are them. at certain times, and that kind of flips around, floats around. Flipping from identification to ownership isn't, you know, it's like getting out of one boat into another sinking boat, you know. It's like, oh, that's that's no way to cross a stream, yeah. All these boats without bottoms. And so it's suggested, is it possible to relate to these things, not disown them, yeah, relate to these things in more skillful ways, the dana ways, the open-palmed ways, yeah, not the upadana ways. So these five, you probably know them, yeah. Form. Okay, so interestingly, you know, a lot of times we'll talk about bodily form that we mistake for ourselves, yeah. Interesting reality, those of you who drive will know that when you step inside a vehicle, you start to have this sense of how big the vehicle is. Yeah, you kind of identify with that form. It's like, oh, don't want to knock the fence, you know, don't want to touch the side of the road. You start to get a sense of a bigger thing. Those of you who live in a apartment or own a home or something like that, you'll notice, oh, the identification with form. And so to the extent, oh, my garden. Oh, there's someone on my garden. So form literally means form, yeah? It doesn't just mean body, yeah? So it can extend in different ways. It's like, usually, to some degree, that starts to get problematic. Yeah, you'll know that kind of territory. You know how that kind of happens to you at times. Could go in various orders here. What we did in the meditation is we actually skipped forward to the fourth aggregate, because, you know, orders are crazy. They're helpful in certain ways. So let's skip there, yeah? Thoughts. You notice in a meditation you get a lot of thoughts, you know, thought forms. We also started off with, like, well, what would it be like to transfer the habitual thought forms for wholesome, beautiful intentions, yeah? So I didn't say to you, when you want to list your intentions or what you want to develop, make sure they're wholesome. No, they just were wholesome, right? When we are intentional about what you want to see more of in the world, yeah? So some of you obviously wanted to say, I want to see more riches coming to me. I want to see, like, a bigger house, you know, with a better view, or I want, yeah, okay. Now that can happen, but I think that comes from somewhere else, doesn't it? It kind of tends to come from someone else. Where you actually tune in, you really think, what do I want? I want more harmonious relationships. You know, I want more peace. I want more connection with nature. You know, those are the kind of things that people were sharing. Yeah. But when left to their own devices, these intentions, they appear, right? Habitual intentions, biological intentions, something from our chemistry, yeah? And we can think, oh, I'm a greedy type. You know, I'm an easily getting angry type. Right? And so we have these patterns of intentions that can arise. And we tend to think, I make my thoughts. Yeah. And that's what we might think in a meditation. It's like, oh, I've got a really busy mind. That's why I can't meditate. You know, I think we've all possibly had that thought at some point. So, oh, yeah, if only then I could meditate. If only I wasn't so agitated, then I could meditate. But actually, all of these things can actually become really skillful areas of exploration, really skillful ways of being. Okay, all of those intentions actually probably have a beauty and a use. And so we don't need to reject any of them. It just needs to be finding the way where they can come across. Yeah. Lots of anxiety probably means you're very sensitive. Sensitivity is really good. Yeah, so we can utilize, lean into that. But that's not entirely what I want to be speaking about now. I just want to be speaking about how quickly we identify with what I like to refer to as thought radio. Yeah? Thought radio, it's just playing. If you think that you can decide what song's going to next play on the radio, then, wow, you've got some control over that radio. Can you decide what thought you're going to think next? Yeah? That anyone who's tried it, wake up in the morning, only good thoughts today. Only good thoughts. I'm only going to be listening to Good Thought FM. You know, do they even put things on FMs anymore? Anyway, you know, you tune into that radio station and only have good, beautiful, wholesome, healing, lovely thoughts. Doesn't work, does it? Because you don't control your thoughts, and yet we identify with them. Yeah, thoughts lead our life. They make a lot of our decisions. But how do they come to be? How do they come to be? Important inquiry. Okay. jumping around this list a little bit. So we've got four done. We've got one done. That was the body that identifies with the garden. Yeah. And then the thoughts that identify with the radio. Okay. Now, also, we have this little preference thing going on. This is often put in second place on the aggregate list. Vedana. This is nice. This is not nice. This is, I don't really care about this. Oh, but that's not nice. And that's really nice. Oh, no. And what happens there is that also leads a lot of our actions. Yeah? Get too hot and we'll move away from that. You can see that in the simplest of organisms, you know, like give them a temperature they don't like, give them a sense of light they don't like, they start to move away. Yeah? Still inbuilt in us, it just arises. Yeah, so why do you like that? I like it because it's, you know, you can make a description. You can generate some thought radio about it. But essentially, no. Very instinctive, very instinctual kind of thing. A sensation arises in the body and we say, that's painful, that's unpleasant. Yeah. And interestingly enough, that usually means there's kind of like this encapsulation, this label on top of it. And we haven't investigated that experience. Investigate it down, we actually realize, except for the Vedana, pain and pleasure can be actually quite similar. Yeah. Just off the top of my head, I'm remembering a story that Pema Chodron told about going up to the top of a boat, and it was kind of very high up kind of boat, and it, I don't know, the sides. She was feeling a fear of heights. But she was with her nephew, and he was feeling a lot of excitement about being high up and how thrilling it was. And then they decided to kind of compare notes. She said, well, it's really unpleasant for me because my digestive system feels like it's turned upside down and my legs have turned to jelly. And he said, yeah, me too. You know. And so apart from the unpleasant Vedana that's added on top, we're actually just having, you know, thoughts, sensations, smells, yeah, flavors, all of that, sounds, visions. Yeah. But whenever they come, also comes Vedana. And that can also be something we identify with. You know, I don't like cabbages, I like courgettes, you know, I don't like the smell of that, and I like the flavour of this. And we can get very identified with and feel very particular about having our preferences served. But actually, they're not us, they're not ours. They're not even something we make. But also, furthermore, we can extend them, yeah? Your preference will change over time. Yeah. Through your life, things change, you get a different taste for things. But also, just moment to moment, yeah, you can have too much of something. So, oh, I used to love that, now I don't. And that can be within 5 minutes. Yeah. You can notice it about anything. You know, have a conversation with someone, and it gets to a certain point, I say, oh, I love this person, I'm really getting bored now. You need to get away. Yeah. Need to do something else. Oh, I can't wait to get in. Back indoors. Oh, been indoors too long. Yeah, it's all Vedana. It's like, almost like the thing itself doesn't need to change. Of course, it is changing in a certain way. But our relationship to it changes. And again, we're really led by Vedanas. We're really led by thought radio. Yeah, so just kind of watching out for that. Can identify with that. Yeah. And feel a sense of ownership of that. I'm making those Vedanas. But are you? Are you? Are they just happening? This is kind of an interesting regard towards the aggregates. Can we just say, body, bodily life, breathing, healing, digesting. Are you doing any of that? No, of course not. You wouldn't have a clue. The digestive system says, well, we're not going to do Thursdays anymore. You're going to have to digest your own food. You wouldn't have a clue. So it's not something we do. It's just happening. So something we can feel ownership of, identified with, same with Vedana, same with thoughts, intentions, attention, that attention happens. Yeah, it's all there in this kind of fourth section. Yeah. So we want the word Vedana spelt, so I will write it for you there. V-E-D-A-N-A, Vedana. So that's a Pali word, just like Dana. And then upadana, yeah, Pali words. Sometimes quite helpful to use those because I don't think we really have a word for it in English, and I'm guessing there's not a word for it in German or other languages, but there may be. I call it the categorization of experience. The categorization of experience. Yeah. Which isn't a word. So we use Vedana because it is a word. But Vedana, interestingly enough, simply means sensation. Sometimes it's referred to as feeling. But we already have different things for sensations, and we would say the sensation has a Vedana. Yeah, the feeling has a Vedana. So, yeah, language hasn't fully worked about it. So, yeah, so someone's suggesting, what about feeling tone? Feeling tone. Well, feeling tone is fine, but if we're going to use feeling tone, maybe we may as well use Vedana. Because I would say the feeling tone, it almost feels like the feeling has a tone, but it doesn't. It has this thing that's added on. So another way that I express this is it's a niceness opinion. Yeah, it's a niceness opinion. And that's really helpful for me because it's really important to remember this is just an opinion. Yeah, it will change. Opinions change. Have you noticed that about opinions? Opinions change. So opinions about the niceness of this thing. Okay, so a lot of my descriptions of Dharma things are for stupid people. It's like Dharma for dummies, yeah. And because that's how I work, you know, I want it to be really immediate and things. It's like that pleasantness. Oh, that's pleasant. No, that's a niceness opinion. It's a niceness opinion. It will change, and it only refers to this moment. But interestingly, it only refers to this moment and me in this moment. Yeah, hence why it gets identified, objectified, in that sense. Okay, we're getting through them. We've already done 3 out of 5. The third one is perception. Yeah, we could say perception and consciousness, they could actually just come along together. And in the final part of the meditation, we were doing them together. So perception, interesting enough, is... I like Anil Seth. I don't know if people have heard of him. A-N-I-L-S-E-T-H. So Anil Seth and another... person, Chris Frith, written some really interesting books about consciousness. So perception is actually an inference, which is to say it's a best guess, it's a prediction. This is what reality is like, I'm pretty sure. And let's just compare it against the data. Yeah. So it actually works in this really interesting way that it feels like reality. And it's very important that for a living being, that they believe that their perception is reality. It's very important for us to act upon our perceptions, to feel that our perceptions are reality. Perception is experience. There's no experience without perception. Yeah, if you're not perceiving anything, you're not experiencing anything. I often describe experience as being made up of objects of attention and atmospheres of attention. And you'll notice in your life, you can change the object of your attention, what you're paying attention to. You're paying attention to me, you're listening to me. But you could also look at the screen, you could look out the window, you can have these different experiences. Yeah. Of course, it feels like we can also combine different sensory experiences, so they have kind of a richer thing. Moment to moment, there's one sense door making contact. Of course, that Vedana is going to pop along as well. And that perception is what we make of that sensory material to evaluate what our best guess of reality is. Okay, so this perception, this inference, this best guess is the theory of what perception is at this time. Yeah, but interestingly, perception is a fabrication. It creates and it conditions what we think life is. What's interesting here, among many, many, many other things, you know. But what's interesting is that we are a perception to ourselves. You have a perception of yourself, yeah? And that perception of yourself is aggregated together, yeah? Put together through these aggregates. I think that's something really, really fascinating. That we are a perception to ourselves, unto ourselves. And ourself feels like we do the perceiving, yeah? But there's no way we do this perceiving. I mean, you kind of start to hear how it actually happens. You know, you take this kind of, I don't know what you're taking, you know, photons and turning them into visual perceptions and colors and all the rest. You know, this just basic raw material that we somehow flip around and manage to make into this perception, this world that we think is out there, yeah, is actually a perception in this consciousness. And kind of oftentimes as a meditator is kind of exploring, saying, yeah, I can recognize that I'm not this body. And I can recognize that I make Vedanas and I make, that thoughts, and Vedanas, they just kind of happen. I'm not really making them. Yeah, kind of, I can let go of that. I can open around that. But perception and consciousness, like then who, what, how am I? Am I not all of this consciousness experience unfolding? And so the whole trick around these teachings is that, is it possible not to grasp onto these? Is it possible not to grasp onto these? This consciousness, is it your consciousness? And so it becomes kind of a difficult thing to kind of play in, because consciousness feels like a thing. Yeah. You may recognize in the language of that meditation, we talked about knowing. And what we normally think of as consciousness is actually thought of as more of an activity, the knowing of something. Yeah. The knowing of something. The knowing obviously needs something to be known. It needs a perception. So perception and consciousness are really just two sides of the same thing. The knowing of a perception, the perception of a knowing. And they're just, oh yeah, this is what life is. Perception, knowing. Perceiving, knowing. Perceiving and knowing. Perceiving and knowing. It's just one entity. Yeah. Seems like if there's a perception, it's known. If there's no perception, there's no knowing, there's no experience. There's no you there, all of this happening. So you depend on perceptions so that they can be known by someone who feels like they're always knowing something. Consciousness, it's always there. But in the Dharma, we're actually suggesting that consciousness also arises and disappears dependent on something to be perceived. And if there's something being perceived, it's some sensory material, and that sensory material gets a Vedana. Yeah, and all that sensory material sits within a rupa, inside a form. Yeah, those directions of intentions led by thoughts, feelings, emotions, tensions, all of those. All this coming and going things. And it's interesting, I think, to actually consider it this way and see, actually, okay, now how is this going to become a liberating teaching? How is this going to become a liberating teaching and not just some kind of, oh, that's an interesting thing to talk about, you know? It's not just some trippy stuff. But actually, does that support a sense that we could play in our intentions to meet these qualities with kindness that is not dependent on identification? Yeah, can meet these with the care that people were talking about, the connection that people were talking about. We can connect with the body and connect with, or in a sense, with any perception, connect with any thought flow. Yeah, we can actually even connect with consciousness itself, such an immaterial thing that it takes some time to really tune into. Ah, there's consciousness here. There's a knowing here. And all of those qualities can be met with kindness and spaciousness and all of that, which starts to mean that it really starts to imbue our existence with a bit more freedom. Yeah? Because, why? Because they're normally clung to, identified with, obsessed around. Yeah? And so we did this shift, consciousness into knowing, like making them verbs. Yeah, making them activities. And actually there's a certain helpfulness in this practice is actually to see they're all verbs. Body is also an activity. Yeah, Vedana. Vedana is also an activity, a categorization. Yeah, I sometimes think of a man or a woman at a filing cabinet. Like, nice, 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 nice. They've got the little boxes. It's this activity. Categorize. Oh, sensations are coming in, and I just categorize them all. You barely even notice. I do it just before it gets into conscious perception. Perceiving, knowing, intending, thinking, yeah, intending, attending. It's all activity. It's all activity. And if you really want to go all the way, it's quite interesting to see that not only are these skandhas, aggregates, another word for them is heaps. Yeah. Not only are each one of them an aggregate, but every aggregate is aggregated together, just as the body is made of body parts, and each body part is made of other parts, and each of those parts are made of smaller things. So you go through molecules and into the kind of quantum, what are they, like predictions, probabilities or something, you know, it just goes down and down and down. You don't even end up with anything in the end. But it's all just heaped together, heaps and heaps. Yeah, an intention, well, the intention, obviously that's heaped together of smaller intentions, smaller thought forms, and build up together. Yeah. Whether it's form or whether it's these more immaterial things, also kind of brought together, and they're all activities. So, the last step of what I want to share is, so how do we then flip this around, actually make this a liberation teaching? So there's kind of two main ways. One is the thoroughness of our approach. Okay, so that's one reason why we talk about this. The thoroughness of our approach. Have we explored all the aggregates? The other thing is just to see, is it possible to let go of identification with this? As a way of practicing, yeah. Am I identified with this stuff? Or can I see them in a different way? With less identification. Yeah. Because I think what we'll find in our experience is a lot of the stress, distress, agitation, reactivity depends on us identifying with our thoughts. Depends on us identifying with our body and that greater body that includes, you know, what I think I own, you know, what I think belongs to me. Yeah. And also how I'm wedded to my Vedana on this thing. Yeah. The thoughts, sensations, all this movement, all this knowing, all this perceiving. Don't need to be a hindrance in that way. And when we start investigating these, we also see not only are they activities, they are temporary activities. They're quite ephemeral. Body sensations, when you really start to look for them, you realize, oh, they're just ripples going through. There's a coming, going nature to all the aggregates. Yeah. We have this kind of presumption, is like, there's a self here, and the aggregates, they're just flowing through now. But this self, it doesn't mind. Yeah, it's in some way independent from it. Yeah. But if we really were independent from it, then we would be a sense of self that doesn't see, feel, know, experience, which actually doesn't make any sense. So we must be entwined with it, we must be integrated with it. And as you go deeper and deeper into this, you realize that the sense of self we imagine ourselves to be, this perception of ourselves that appears in this knowing, perceiving realm, actually there's no possible way for it to be either the same as or different from the aggregates. It can't be the same as, otherwise it would come and go with them. It can't be different for them. From them, otherwise it wouldn't experience the world. It can't be the same as them, otherwise it would come and go with all of them. But it can't be different from them, for this sense of self would not experience this moment. Just holding that reflection, whether it makes entirely great sense to you or not, you get to see, oh, not who I thought I was. And here I am being who I didn't think I was. Who am I? What am I? But the question is more, how does that feel? How does that feel? And the kind of the third element here, yeah, the thoroughness of the approach, that willingness to see, can I let go of that, is can this become another lever that we can play with that opens more freedom? Because it can also be a lever that entangles, enmeshes, reactivity, all of that, dukkha, yeah, less freedom. If that's possible, more identification, it's possible to be obsessed, yeah, deeply troubled, believing every thought we have, then it's also possible to start turning it the other way with more spaciousness, more of those beautiful intentions you brought in today. Yeah. Because meditation is this cultivation of insightful ways of perceiving that bring more and more freedom. Yeah, these ways of a cultivated perceiving that frees the aggregated heap of heaps beyond the individual or even collective heaps. It's something much more free. Yeah. Something much more free. So thank you for coming along on this particular journey. I hope that some of it will feel helpful. I didn't want it to be theoretical, but actually kind of pragmatic. May take time to fully grasp all of this, and some of this stuff I've written more about on the dependentorigination.org website. And yeah, maybe we can bump into each other later on courses and the various to, you know, kind of deepen this. But I hope it's... sparks some interest and inquiry. So we still have some time, and yeah, I'd love to hear some reflections from you and questions and everything, and you can unmute or you can put it in the chat, whichever feels right for you. So the participant here wants to share something and is concerned that it might sound a little bit negative. And what it is, you know, kind of enjoyed letting go of the sense of preference, and that felt really freeing, felt really good. But then tuned into letting go of thoughts and this feeling that, you know, some of these thoughts, very beautiful thoughts, and actually they're very enjoyable to be thinking and feel quite delightful, but also kind of seeing that, you know, I'm not identified with those. And actually that's also really nice not to feel that sense of that weight of responsibility with our thoughts and our thinking process. Yeah, thank you. So I don't know if I picked up the wrong end of it, because it didn't sound very negative to me, what you were saying. So yeah, by the end of it. So I don't know if I missed a bit in the middle when you were going to say something a bit more negative, or it just sounded a bit more negative to you. But yeah, I think when we so basically, I think the first thing to actually say, which is something we didn't exactly say, is that we want to have many ways of looking at our experience. Yeah, and so this aggregate teaching, you know, the Buddha offered, he didn't say, oh, you know, you could try this once in a while. He kind of was saying, I can't see another way that the self turns up. Yeah. But in our life, in our experience, I think we can hold it in an even more intentional way, which is to say, what's it like when I look at myself as being an aggregated phenomena? Yeah. Is that, what happens for me when I see myself as just another perception in this knowing, flowing consciousness way? Yeah. What is it when I look at my experience as just like, well, this is thought radio. It's just like blah, 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 you know, it's like going on. And some of those thoughts are beautiful. And I can say that, you know, the Buddha actually had this thing where he would actually say, not just Vedana as a categorization, but what about if we categorize our thoughts as these are wholesome, they're creative, they're beautiful, they're really supportive for like visions and projects and things that are going to take, take beauty into the world, take freedom into the world. And then these other thoughts, which are maybe they're annoying thoughts, they're just like persistent, petty thoughts, they're greedy or aversive or harmful thoughts. Like, why would I think those thoughts? Whereas I could have thoughts of generosity and creativity and happiness, basically. Yeah. And if we find we're having those kinds of thoughts, well, as human beings who are living a life where we're probably going to be having thoughts, shouldn't we encourage and have those kinds of thoughts, share those kinds of thoughts? And I think probably something we've all noticed is that the thoughts that we share, which is to say the words that we speak, yeah, the thoughts that we decide to turn into words and we share with others, that shapes how we feel and it shapes how the other feels. But interestingly enough, it seems to also send down some signals into unconsciousness HQ that says these are the kinds of thoughts they want on Thought Radio. Yeah, so it's not that Thought Radio is entirely independent of us. It's actually dependent on what we said. Yeah, let's listen and speak those yesterday. Yeah, and that affects radio of today. And that yesterday goes back to yesterdays of yesteryears, you know. And so those habit patterns, they start to repeat. Where the radio gets tuned to and what it kind of tends to play isn't unaffectable. It is affectable. We can shape, we can affect what appears on there. And by choosing and selecting which thoughts we turn into words and we turn into actions, more clear actions, they're already actions, but like more clear actions, then they have a impact, which is to say, you know, they are an activity that has impact. So yeah, does that respond a bit to what you were saying, or might have gone a different way? So the response back was that, yeah, what they were meaning earlier was that maybe the negativity was actually that it might sound a little bit morbid, that they felt a responsibility to let go of their thinking. You know, getting to a position in life where, you know, need to let go of everything as we come to the end of an existence. And actually seeing that way of relating to thinking, even beautiful thoughts, with less identification, actually meant it's not so much something I need to let go of. It's not something I did alone. Yeah, thank you. So yes, so I see exactly what you were meaning around what could have become negative is that kind of, is it a bit morbid to speak about that? But you were really speaking about it from the point of view of relief. And yeah, it's really interesting to see that, this could be another way of actually expressing it. Is like when there's less identification with something, what happens for us? So on the one hand, the self sense lightens. And interestingly, more identification with the aggregates of all forms, particularly thoughts, we can see that. More identification with that, it's actually dukkha increases from that identification because it is upadana, and upadana is a condition for dukkha. So more identification and less identification, yeah, have an impact on the felt sense of freedom. Yeah, tends to be less identification supports more freedom. So it's interesting to see, oh, I thought there was something here I had to let go of in my life at some point. I'm going to have to work on that, find ways to do it. And it's like actually seeing it in the realm of like, it's actually just happening. It's actually just happening. And as we were saying, you know, that kind of two sorts that the Buddha was talking about, some are really helpful and some are really wholesome, but they're all just happening. They're all just happening. And some of them are beautiful and really to be enjoyed. But so is the birdsong outside my window. Yeah, and I don't think that's my bird song. That's, you know, I just feel there's a way of relating which actually supports more freedom. So yeah, really lovely reflection. So the next participant here is speaking a little bit about the feeling of piti arising, and I'll describe what piti is in my response. But also a feeling that there's a lot of heat, a lot of energy coming up into the system, and it being quite difficult to bear. Feeling it's actually kind of taking one away from the peacefulness and the freedom feeling that they have been getting to enjoy in their practice. And do I have any tips or something in the reflection that could support this? And, you know, recognizing that maybe this is a little bit different than the teaching that we've been opening to today. Yeah, sure. Thanks. Thank you for that. So mentioning, you know, the kind of the rising of the PT experience and, you know, kind of a lot of heat, a lot of body energy kind of coming up in your experience. So, and that can get to a level of intensity that's very difficult to be with. Yeah. So if I'm kind of mapping it well. So I'll just describe this word piti that you mentioned earlier so that we're all kind of on the same page with it. Many ways in which we could define it. One of them that I find most helpful is kind of a modification I've made of Rob Bebea's definition. So I'll just give you my definition to save time, but just kind of mapping where it kind of comes from. And I think he's a real helpful person in this field. So we would say piti is a non-physical bodily sensation. Yeah, so it's non-physical. It's like you don't think that, you know, your physicality is actually moving in a certain way, but you feel it in the body field. Yeah, so it's like a body energetics. So it's a non-physical body sensation which can be perceived as pleasant. Yeah, and in fact, for it to be fully piti, it needs to be perceived as pleasant. Okay. But it can come at such a strength and a difficulty that it's very difficult to kind of get on board with that. Yeah. So it's almost like you say to someone, you know, do you like curry? And you say, yeah, I like curry. And they just put the whole curry paste in the pan. No vegetables, no rice, nothing. You just get this whole, I like curry. But eating curry sauce, hot curry sauce, that's difficult. That's difficult. Yeah. And so we get this experience, what we would say is too much. Too much. And interestingly, too much always has an unpleasant vedana. Too much always has an unpleasant vedana. Yeah? By its very definition, it is a quantity in excess of what is pleasant. That's what too much means. Yeah? But there's a different way of actually perceiving that, which is it's a lot. It's a lot. Now, a lot does not have a fixed vedana. Yeah? You could say there's a lot of cake in my kitchen. Yeah? But if I say there's too much cake in my kitchen, then it's obvious, come round, help me, I have a problem, I have a cake problem, you know. So can we perceive this piti is a lot, there's a lot, and just make sure that we don't define it as too much, okay? Because that defining of too much, yeah, which actually sits there in that fourth aggregate quality, you know, it's a mental formation, yeah, it adds an intention, demands a way of paying attention to it, that then becomes problematic. Yeah, it's kind of like wrapping it back into this. It's also perception, yeah, that arises from that way of looking at this. So we just want to make sure that we reframe that one, first of all, yeah? It's like, whoa, there's a lot of heat, there's a lot of movement, there's a lot of stuff, and it's too much, yeah? Actually, it's a lot. Actually, it's a lot. It's a lot. And in the direct experience, you will really feel how radically different that is to switch from too much to a lot, okay? It means now that we've entered the realm of possibilities. And it's just a question of now what to do. Now, what can we do with that? So we're looking to get this into a perception of pleasantness. Okay? And this can be a number of things that we need to do in terms of supporting that. One is we can just open the space. Okay? Because what does a lot of something need? It needs a bigger... My cakes, they need a bigger kitchen. Yeah? Like I can't change the quantity of cakes in there, but I could open the windows, I could like open the doors, I can spread them around the whole house. And now it kind of feels like there isn't too much cake in the kitchen, yeah? There's a lot more space. It's got a lot more possibilities. So in terms of this, it's like, am I identified with a very narrow part of my physical form? So don't remember, there's always loads of space behind you. There's always plenty of space above you. Yeah, we're on a planet in the universe. There's a lot of space that we can tune into. When the knowing, this fifth aggregate, becomes aware, it perceives that, you know, there's a whole night sky above me. There's a whole wide space behind me. I can actually open into that space. And then the energy that's moving through has a lot more freedom in which to pass. The second thing relates to this teaching from today is we can get very identified with the rupa, with the form. Yeah. And it's like, oh, you're not coming up here. No, you're not, you know, and then you can just subtly feel like, you know, I will decide how much energy there is in this body. If we can take on a lens, and for those who need to go, I'm just going to wrap this up in a couple of minutes and then I'm happy to stay on with anyone who wants to talk more. If we can have this sense, this isn't my body. This is just a body that I am aware of that right now I'm meditating. I've got nothing going on with this body. If PT, a visitor into this body, this a lot of heat, a lot of vibration, wants to pass through, and I know and I've heard from others, this is a wholesome, healthy, beautiful quality that arises when the hindrances fade. Yeah, when greed and aversion are quiet, those classic thought forms, when restlessness and sleepiness have kind of harmonized. Yeah, when there isn't real doubt in the body, then PT starts to arise. It arises by the absence of the hindrances. Yeah, so it needs that support of the hindrances, which is non-identification with the body. So I just settled the body down here. I'm going to do some meditation. Wherever you want to go is fine with me. And just kind of see, oh, can it come up to here? Can it go through there? Can it actually just flow through? That's almost like what it wants to do. It's like, way, we're waving through, you know, a big old wave of this stuff coming through, which can feel like too much, but actually we're looking for that feeling. It's a lot. Open space, keep with the space, keep it open, just let things flow through as much as we can. Anytime you want to stop, just stop. Yeah, you know how to stop, open your eyes, move your body. Whew, that was a lot. Yeah, and we'll see if those kinds of ways of playing and framing can be helpful. So as I say, I'm happy to stay on, happy to hear more. If you need to go, thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. It's been a real pleasure to explore the Dharma with you. There'll be another session of the online Dharma Hall tomorrow. And yeah, if you're able to make that, it'd be lovely for you to be there. Thank you. But as I say, I'll stay on and I'm happy to hear a response to that if it's helpful. So the reflection there was gratitude and also contemplating that maybe thinking about a whole load of cake in the house is a good way to bring into that practice. Beautiful. Thank you. And the final reflection for today was tuning into a sense earlier, not just in this session, of actually all these activities are happening and all the actions that I do in my life, I'm not in control. And actually finding it a little bit scary to feel out of control. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for bringing that in. And, you know, I think this is a really helpful point actually to clarify. So we could say in the Dharma, we're always looking for this middle way. Yeah. And so when we talk about self and we talk about these kind of aggregates and we talk about seeing them in these ways. So as I was saying earlier to an earlier question, you know, it's like this is a way of looking at our experience that we're looking for it to be helpful. Okay. But if we think about a middle way, so we flip actually quite often from one side to the other. Yeah. Kind of flip from I'm in control to I'm out of control. Yeah. And I think what's helpful for me as a view, which is to say, I can still have an influence. So like we kind of gave that example with the thought radio. It's like, well, nothing to do with me. I'm not in control of what I think. Well, hang on. So I'm not in control of what actions I do. I'm not in control of these things. And that we can take a stance. And there are quite a few people who are interested in is that it. So, is there free will? Is there not free will? You know, do I have volition or not? And the interesting thing, what I've been referring to mostly is kind of thoughts, intention, things, sankhara, often called volitional formations. Volitional formations. So the Buddha is using this word that people feel it's appropriate to say it has volition in it. Yeah. And we can shape those. So volition is like will. Yeah. It's to will into being something. And at any time when there's an appearance, it comes from this will. Now, we can set intentions for ourselves, and we can stick to them, and we can support them, and we can grow them, and all this kind of stuff. And for some people, they will want to take a stance and say, well, there's no free will. Yeah, those intentions that you feel that you're having, they're actually coming from somewhere else. And so it can kind of feel like that. But that's drawing a conclusion without actually sufficient evidence, right? And we want to maintain the middle way, which is to say it doesn't make sense to say I'm in control, but it also doesn't make sense to say I'm out of control. Because look at your experience, look at your life. It matters what you do, and you feel a sense of choice. You know, do I walk past and stroke the dog or kick the dog? I feel like I have a choice there, you know, because I understand what I wish to see more of. You know, when someone's barking at you in the conversation, is arguing with you and putting you down, you realize I have a choice. I could bark back, or I could say, have you had a hard day? You know, let's just pause and have a breath before we carry on with this conversation. Yeah. So we know, we see that there are skillful responses and unskillful responses. So the words that I use is we can be a major influencer on our existence. But I don't think we can be in control, and I don't think it makes sense to sit on the side of saying I'm out of control. So the participant reflects back that, yeah, that really supports them to feel a lot less fear in relationship to this experience, to actually see that possibility of finding their way through it. Yeah, thank you. Nice. Nice. And then that allows us a little bit more freedom when we don't feel so frightened to actually look a little bit clearer, get a little bit more sensitive, come closer to the unfolding experience. Because, yeah, fear, it rigidifies these things. It's actually, it's like this. And I can shape that, play with that. And, yeah, it can be a real delight and softening in that letting go also. Because it's a very important insight. I'm not in control. But it becomes really freeing when we... So what's the middle way? What's the middle way? Not flip all the way to the other side. Really, really helpful, yeah. Thanks for bringing that in. Thank you. Great, okay. Thank you, everyone. So I think we'll kind of wrap up. At that point, if you want to unmute as you leave, really feel very invited to. And thank you for being here.